Yes, it's our first Health Naturally for the year, and I'm joined by Dennis Stewart. Welcome back.
Thank you, my dear. It's very nice to be back.
It's nice to see your smiling face.
Oh, that's good.
It's like a warm hug.
Oh, how about that? How about that?
Now, have you got any particular topics that you're going to concentrate on this year?
I've given a lot of thought to that, and I thought what we might do is look at particularly the way in which herbs are being used for more serious conditions than what many people think. And I'll refer to a few instances of where herbs around the world are being used increasingly to address even conditions such as cancer as complementary therapies, not in any way at all competing or taking the place of mainstream Western medicine, but providing some useful complementary benefits for people that are undergoing particularly therapy for their cancer. Very interesting information that I've been looking at over the break. I want to share some of it with listeners this year and, of course, leave the program open to all questions that listeners want to pass on to us. So I'm looking forward to a good year looking at that primary topic, herbs to treat and help serious conditions, but also looking at listener questions and doing the best to help them.
Well, we look forward to listening to your advice. And just, you were saying before, Dennis, so as of this year, we're on Tuesdays at 12 o'clock, except for the second Tuesday of the month.
I think that's the way it is. The second Tuesday of each month, unless otherwise advised, is the day that, unfortunately, I'll have to let go in order to sustain one of my practice days.
Yes.
But 3 days is enough of me, I'm sure, for listeners. And it gives me a bit of a chance also to think up some new ideas.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
So, yeah, it's not a bad idea, really. I had some reservations about it at first, but now I think it's going to work well.
And we've got Dee from Hunter Valley on the line. Hi, Dee.
Hi.
How can we help you?
Just wondering if Dennis could recommend a good natural therapy for someone going through a menopause that won't upset taking estrogen and progesterone, something to calm the nervous system.
Yes.
Is there anything he can suggest?
Tell you what I would suggest is that you try some of the well-known gentle remedies, and by gentle I mean remedies that have no significant ability to interact with any medication that your doctor may have prescribed. And these remedies, unfortunately, are not given the regard that they should be. They work quite well. They're gentle. They need to be persevered with. They can be purchased readily from a good health food store or even a pharmacy these days, if not a supermarket. Yep. The sorts of herbs that I would suggest you consider purchasing and convert them into a pleasant herbal tea would be herbs such as chamomile, passion flower. That's quite a good remedy, not frequently used, but used a lot by medical herbalists as a good herb to prescribe with chamomile where you need a support remedy. Chamomile and that secondary herb, think about those two to start with. Persevere with them, because these sorts of remedies are not like strong, overwhelming nervous system remedies. They just tend to take the edge off mood swings and irritability. That's a good way of putting it. So those two as a start, chamomile and passion flower. The third one that I recommend that usually runs with those two herbs is the herb hops. Now, hops is a herb, and it is very, very useful for both insomnia and also for mild anxiety states. Those three herbs would have very little ability to interrupt or interact with what your good doctor has prescribed and should give you enough help to use across the day as a couple of cups of those herbal teas. Yeah. I would go down that pathway.
Okay, and they won't affect any antidepressants for paranoia that comes with it?
It is unlikely, but anything like that, you should run past your prescribing doctor, particularly if you're on a prescribed antipsychotic or anti-anxiety medication. But these are gentle remedies, and I'd be surprised if there was an interaction. Your pharmacist could easily tell you that, but I've never found that to be so, but check it with your medical prescriber and or your pharmacist.
Thank you very much, Dennis.
Thank you, Dee.
Thanks, Dee. Bye. I bet my husband's at home writing that down. Passion flower, chamomile, to stop me from being irritable.
Okay.
All right, we've got Joy from Tweed Heads on the line. Hi, Joy. Are you there?
Hello, how are you?
Good, thank you. How can we help you?
Amanda, I'm just ringing to speak to Dennis. I have two grandsons that have both got celiac, and the seven-year-old is a very poorly eater, and there's nothing much of him. Mm. He's only just been diagnosed with it in the last few months, where the other one's had it for quite a few years now. Yes. He's quite older.
Yes.
But Benny, we can't get Benny to eat anything, Dennis. He's a terrible eater. A normal seven-year-old won't eat vegetables.
Oh, dear.
But is there any sort of herbal thing or anything that we may be able to get for him to help him with his appetite or help him through the celiac problem?
Is he taking any prescribed medication, Joy?
No, not at the moment. He's on a vitamin that he has every day.
Has
a medicine type thing, a black medicine.
Okay.
I can't think of the name of that. His mum gets that from the chemist.
Has he seen a dietitian?
Yes.
And has the dietitian worked out an eating program for him?
As far as I know.
Yes. Look, it's pretty important that you take advantage of a professional like that, because they have an in-depth knowledge of the sorts of foods that would be free of any challenge to his medical condition. So I think that's a starting base. Don't overlook that. Frequently we don't take advantage of the facilities that are out there to address problematic conditions like this.
Yep.
What I would say is this. Look, my experience as a father and a grandfather of too many children, I would pass on to you that my observation has been that sometimes we become a bit too anxious about this. I had a daughter who still have a daughter, a lovely daughter. She's a woman now, of course, with her own children. But it was difficult to get her to eat anything other than spaghetti. And that used to distress me particularly. But yet, she moved on from that to be a very good eater. What am I saying? I'm saying that, look, sometimes we make a big issue of it. Unless there is a serious medical condition, you usually find that kids themselves work their way through it. I don't think there is any one secret approach to it. What I would be suggesting is that you seek to get, well, discuss it again with your doctor or pharmacist, but seek to get a good a supplement, something that could be converted into a pleasant drink, for instance, something that would have plenty of protein in it and the right mix of carbohydrates, something that you would perhaps give to an older person who has a medical condition where they're not thriving. So I would suggest that go to your pharmacy or your doctor and talk about a useful powder supplement that could be converted into a pleasant drink, and there are various flavours. I won't mention names of the products that I'm thinking about, but think about going along that pathway, a daily drink of, say, a supplement that is based on a particular formula that incorporates a good blend of protein, which is the building block of the body, with plenty of good carbs that are not going to incorporate any challenge to his condition. I think that's probably a better way of approaching it than looking for a magic bullet.
Yeah, okay, Dennis, okay.
Give that a go, Joy.
All right, Dennis, thank you very much.
Thank you, Joy.
Thanks, Joy.
Thank you.
Good
Thanks,
luck.
Amanda.
Bye.
Bye.
Now, Dennis, you've occasionally mentioned the emerging interest in herbs and foods as agents to help resist serious health problems. Could you mention some of the work that has been done and how people can access the information?
Oh, look, I think this is a very good topic and I've given a lot of thought to it over the holidays, the way in which I feel that in this country we're a little bit behind some of the work that's being done around the world, particularly in Europe, but not just Europe, where there is a greater interest, I would argue, in looking at natural things, foods and herbs, as not just quaint oddities, but as agents that in fact can help considerably in managing or helping to manage many serious conditions that people have. There's still a tendency amongst many people in this country, including health professionals, to think that, as I've said, that herbs and certain foods that we mentioned, that I mentioned, are in fact quaint, a bit odd, but have no real part to play in seeking to help people manage sometimes quite serious diseases. I think this is sad because I argue, and I've mentioned it for years and years, that I think we're behind what's happening around the world, where big moves are being made to harness the benefits, particularly of herbs, in addressing very serious conditions, even some cancers, whereas, as a complementary medicine, working alongstream working alongside the mainstream, they can give a great deal of help. I've been particularly interested of late in a food, which we can refer to as a herb if we want. I've been interested in a food that is emerging in English-speaking literature, in papers, medical papers. Journal of Cancer Prevention is a good article in there that I've been working through, where the use of the food beetroot, both its root and its leaves, have been now shown to be a functional food. That's the term that's used, a functional food for helping people manage their cancer and helping people go through various aspects of chemotherapy, go through it more easier, with less dramas and less trauma. Now, who would have thought, in this country that a food that sometimes we eat, not as perhaps as much as we should, but that food has been shown to have, as many cultures have demonstrated, a great deal of potential. Let me emphasise to ease some of the features of the process, the journey through chemotherapy, a cancer therapy, which sometimes brings with it a lot of fatigue, a lot of tiredness, a lot of insomnia, a lot of depression. All these sorts of things can be the byproduct of a therapy that's necessary, but is not well known, can be buffered somewhat by natural substances. I'm referring to a paper here that was called up in the Journal of Cancer Prevention way back in March 2021, where it was shown there that, for instance, in countries around the world, particularly Germany, Germany, by the way, for the sake of listeners, has always been a leader in the use of herbs and foods as a means of helping to fight disease or help manage disease. And in Germany, in the paper that I'm referring to, and I've always known this, in Germany, for instance, the beetroot is seen as one of the most important dietetic measures, to quote the paper, that patients with cancer use in Germany particularly. What is this paper saying? This paper is saying that it is the most frequently used alternative or complementary medicine associated with the treatment of cancer, particularly managing some of the side effects of it. Here's Germany.
Wow.
But in other parts of the world, it's even used more seriously. I have quotes here about how in cases like in the Middle East, in the Arab countries, in Ayurvedic medicine, beetroot on its own as a juice or blended with other substances is a popular functional food. That means a popular food used not as a treatment, not as a cure, but as a functional food to help fight even conditions such as breast, prostate, colorectal cancer. If people are disputing what I'm saying and thinking I'm losing it, I'm not. Just because it sounds queer and simply because it's associated with a common vegetable doesn't mean to say that this hasn't got a lot to offer people that are going through the journey. Sure, it needs to be discussed perhaps with the managers of their condition, but I doubt very much whether there would be any objection to a client or a patient using beetroot juice as a means of perhaps buffering some of the side effects of their journey through cancer therapy.
That's really interesting. Could you use it out of, like, just, you know, you get the tins of beetroot?
Can. But yeah. What's available now, and we're using it in my practice, is powdered beetroot.
Right.
And readily available and very, very economical. It's not anything that you're going to pay an arm and a leg for.
Do you just put that in
food?
Yeah,
you just put it with food, and you also can turn it into a juice. The usual amount that's used is about a teaspoonful of, if you can get it, organic beetroot powder. Use that a couple of times a day as a pleasant drink. Some put it with carrot juice as well. This might sound rather quaint to all my medical professionals out there who just shake their head at what I'm saying, but this is the recommendation, and it might surprise the cynics out there to know how well known this is already around the world. The use of beetroot juice in conjunction with mainstream oncology as a means of perhaps giving a better outcome and allowing the patient to go through the journey without having to withdraw, as many patients do have due to the side effects of chemotherapy.
That's,
I throw that in.
Yeah, really interesting.
I throw that in. I have the paper. If by chance there are medical professionals out there who want the reference, I'd be happy to give them the reference to study. But I'd suggest to listeners, no one ever got hurt taking beetroot. You get it on a hamburger.
Unless they're allergic. That's
okay. Well,
otherwise,
we can be allergic to almost anything,
can't
we?
Right.
Okay.
Oh, dear.
Okay.
All right. We've got okay. Wayne from Rathmines on the line. Hi, Wayne. Thanks for holding. You there?
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, yep. Yeah. Thank you very much for taking my call.
That's all right. You've got a son that's a bit backed up.
I have, yes. He's 12 years old, and like a lot of kids his age, he's a little bit devious of using the toilets at school.
Oh,
and
okay.
He's constantly complaining about having a bit of a sore tummy. I've had him into the doctors, and
yes.
They've had x-rays and that, and they've sort of said, yeah, look, he's a bit backed up. He needs to go to the toilet a bit more, but he's... Because he's going to school, like, he'll get up early in the morning and he'll try sitting on the toilet for a while, but
it
doesn't always happen. I'm just wondering if maybe there's something that's, like, natural that I can give him on a regular sort of a basis that might help him along with that.
Look, there are a couple of things that should be able to help here, Wayne, and they're both readily available, very economical, and they're not nasty. The first thing is, don't overlook the long-known benefits of prune juice. Prune juice is available in the supermarkets, but yet it's one of the oldest well-known preparations to gently give the bowel a bit of a nudge in the right direction, put it that way. So
yeah.
Older people particularly are aware of it because our generation probably used it a lot more before more subtle anti-constipational remedies were developed. So start to use some of that on a regular basis as a means of promoting regularity. And the other thing is, and I've seen this work particularly well, there's a herb called slippery elm. Now, slippery elm is harmless. It can be taken in a capsule form or it can be mixed into a smoothie, say with some milk, But what slippery elm does, it provides a very gentle bulking effect in the gut and causes the gut to contract like a concertina, so to speak, and therefore causes the bowel to be a little bit more active. If you were to use both those things, or one or the other to start with, I'm sure that you would find that you'd get a result that would overcome this hesitancy that your boy has.
I have tried the prune juice, but yes, like all kids his age, he just doesn't really like it.
Yeah, look, I've got a doctor here with me.
No, I've just got my hand up because I've had a similar problem. Yes. And recently I started taking using chia seeds, and yes, I found that they've really helped me. Yes. Just putting them in my cereal, in my food. And yeah, they don't have any flavour really, so maybe you could try that.
Well, that's a good point. Yeah. Well, but chia seeds belong to a group of foods that can contain good roughage and also good mucilage. So that food, together with linseed, is another food that has similar characteristics. Those sorts of things are useful, but kids are kids. They're a damn nuisance at times, aren't they? You want to help them.
Oh, God. Are they just?
And they balk at it. But look,
I did have somebody recommend Metamucil, but
Metamucil is a good remedy. It's based on the herb psyllium. And it has a long reputation of benefit in treating this condition. And you can get, fortunately, you can get from the supermarket or the pharmacy, you can get this product in a flavoured form. I think it's an orange-flavoured form, which makes it easy to take. That's a good starting base. If those sorts of recommendations don't make him move, well, gee, I wouldn't like to be around when he does move.
Okay, no worries. Well, that's given me something to work with anyway. So thank you very much for that. That's a great help.
Thank you, Wayne.
Thanks,
Wayne.
Bye. Next, we've got Graham from Yamba on the line. Hi, Graham. How can we help you?
Good morning, Dennis.
Hello, Graham.
I developed atopic dermatitis, eczema, after one of the COVID vaccines.
Oh, yeah.
I take heart medication in Repatha and Perindopril and aspirin. Is there anything I can take to assist? I've been on cortisone creams and everything like that on and off for 3 years.
Nice.
And obviously I know you can't get rid of eczema, and using the moisturisers and the eczema washes and all those things. Is there anything that would assist with that? And also the almost continuous tiredness I have.
Yes, I can understand that. I know a fair bit about eczema. I actually got into natural medicine as a result of my own experience of it. I don't
it's
want to go
chronic,
through...
by any stretch of the imagination. It's annoying, but it's not chronic.
It's not chronic, okay. Well, that makes it a little bit easier to treat, I suggest. But, look, there's a couple of little things that I don't think would clash with your medication, but again, because you're on sophisticated heart medication, you need to get the tick of approval from your cardiologist or your GP. But oil of evening primrose, taken as an oral supplement, there's enough information, if you like to surf the net, so to speak, to justify taking it in an elevated dose. I recommend adults to take about 6 grams, which usually is 6 by 1,000 milligram capsules of oil of evening primrose. That's a long-standing remedy of recommendation that I have made. Does everyone respond to it? No. Do many people respond to it? Yes. Is it pleasant? It's not nasty. It comes in an encapsulated form. Does it have any side effects? Well, there's side effects with almost everything, but it is such a popular, common, readily available supplement that I could see little problem in taking it. So there's one thing. The second thing is that I've referred already today to the way in which, in my opinion, European medical literature is more au fait with some of the gentle remedies from the herbal world that can work in harmony with or sometimes on their own in treating particular remedies. Now, in Europe, interestingly, the herb known as heartsease is used. Its botanical name is Viola tricolor. It's a member of the violet family. The name heartsease might immediately ring alarm bells, but there's no indication that I'm aware of for it having any cardiovascular ramifications. But it is the first remedy that many practitioners in Europe go to, and it's basically used as a herbal tea. Now, I know that sounds rather folksy, but keep in mind, in Europe, the use of herbs as herbal teas is a long-standing way of using the herb. The herb has been used a lot more traditionally in European culture than what it has in Anglo culture. So used as a herbal tea, the dried herb purchased from a herbalist or a health food store, readily available, convert it into a cup of herbal tea, a couple of cups of that per day, in my opinion, has a good chance with the oil of evening primrose of taking the edge off the condition. Run that past your medical managers. I can't see any reason why it would be a problem. With reference to the itch, is the itch severe at this stage?
No, it isn't really.
Okay, good, good.
It's quite manageable.
Good, good. Because I have found, in my experience of it over the years, that pine tar preparations as an ointment or a lotion are quite remarkable in their ability to sedate some of the itch that emerges with certain forms of eczema. And I think it's a little bit sad that dermatology today doesn't seem to use that older-fashioned way of treating eczema topically. Some of my best results were in my using as a topical application a cream from older medical literature based on pine tar constituents. So there's a bit of a help for you, not a great deal, but those two first things I recommended, think about those.
Would the evening primrose help with the tiredness as well?
Look, it may well be, but your tiredness may be more associated with the cardiovascular medication you might be taking.
Yeah, I've been round and round in circles.
Yeah, I know.
Different medication.
I know. I know. It's a dilemma, but I doubt very much whether those medications or those supplements that I mentioned would have much to do with the fatigue. But look, take on board what I said earlier in the program about my studies and fascination and enthusiasm for the potential benefits of beetroot in various forms. I know this sounds rather folksy, I said that earlier, but beetroot is more to be seen now as a functional food, and with some of its anti-inflammatory and broad-spectrum medical benefits, it might be useful to try anyway the drinking of some beetroot juice on a daily basis.
Good luck with that, Graham. All the best.
Thank you very much indeed.
Thanks for your call. Bye. This is Health Naturally with Dennis Stewart on 2NURFM. And we had Gail. She called up and she was talking about beetroot and saying how that helped her sister who had cancer 35 years ago.
Yes, look, this is very nice of Gail to have rung in because it tends to give support to the statement that I made this morning or so, in the last hour or so, that beetroot is just not an edible, lovely edible vegetable as it is, but it has potential therapeutic benefits. And here was a lady that rang us up to say that her sister had bowel cancer and had some benefit by taking the beetroot juice. Look, it can't hurt, and I'm looking at the paper here, which supports that condition as being a benefit that is harnessed in some countries, particularly around the West Indies and places like that. So thank you, Gail, for ringing in. I needed that little bit of support because people will tend to think that I'm in for selling vegetables. I'm not. I'm here to mention the potential benefits of foods in conditions that normally are not associated with the benefit. I ask all listeners, if they're good on the net, to punch in beetroot juice and health and see the information that emerges could do you good.
Well, that's the thing. You know, we talk about healthy eating. So even if it doesn't sort of help you with what you're talking about, it's just generally a healthy food.
Look, it is a healthy food. There are other conditions, of course, that it is used for other than that serious condition. But even in helping manage things like fatigue, athletes have long known, I'm talking about athletes overseas, have long known the potential of beetroot juice as a food to support their athletic enterprises. There's no secret in that. Mm. If you study the chemistry of the herb or the food, you would understand why that is so. So for those cynics out there who think that only health comes from a script, please broaden the mind, see the possibility that a food is frequently more useful in managing a health problem, i.e. fatigue, than what some of the modern biomedical approaches are.
How many servings should you have a day of beetroot?
Well, look, beetroot juice, a litre a day is used by some who are seeking to use it in a serious medical way.
Would that have an effect as far as the bowel goes or anything?
But prefer not to comment on that because I've not subjected that to clinical trials. But look, two teaspoonfuls of beetroot powder, that is a fair amount of fresh beetroot that really has been dehydrated. So it sounds a lot when we talk about, say, a litre of beetroot juice, and that probably is going over the top. But two teaspoonfuls, heap teaspoonfuls of beetroot powder, there's a lot there that would equate to a fair amount of beetroot juice. But look, if you get good organic beetroot, that's the best way to use it and probably cheaper too.
Yeah. Who knew beetroot was so fascinating? There you go.
Mate, we all used it in hamburgers when I was a kid.
Yeah.
It was mandatory.
That's it. Well, I think it's still in some.
In some. I hope it comes back.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much, Dennis. Okay. We will catch up with you in 2 weeks' time. It's been nice to have you back for
Thank
Health
you so
Naturally
much.
To NURFM.